Teaching Me to Code Podcast, Episode 22, Agile Roots and Interview with Andrew Schaefer. Hello, coders, and welcome back to another Teach Me to Code Podcast. This is your host, Charles Max Wood, and this week we're going to be going over a couple of things. We're going to be talking with Andrew Schaefer, who is one of the co-founders of the Agile Roots Conference in Salt Lake City. And we're going to be talking about the conference. We're going to be talking a lot about Agile. We're going to be doing a few things differently in this podcast. One is that we are going to include the entire podcast, which is an hour long, rather than splitting it up into two 30-minute segments. There are two reasons for this. One is I want to try it out, see what you guys think. So if you give me some feedback, that would be terrific. The other reason is because Agile Roots is actually only in 2 weeks. So if you want to come out to the conference, then I highly recommend you sign up now. But it wouldn't make sense to discuss the conference and have two conflicting episodes, or two episodes and have the last one come out just a week before the conference. So, we're actually going to put this out now. I also want to remind you that this, podcast is sponsored by New Relic. New Relic is a leading provider of application performance management tools for Ruby and Java applications. Thousands of companies use New Relic RPM to monitor, troubleshoot, and optimize applications deployed either in the cloud or in dedicated hosting environments. RPM Lite is a free, fully supported, unlimited time version available at www.newrelic.com. All the leading Rails companies use New Relic, including 37signals, AT&T Interactive, Shopify, OurStage, IGN, and lots more. So go check them out at www.newrelic.com or go to the site and click on the banner on the right. All right, well, we're going to get into the podcast or into the interview, and I'll just start it now. We'll pick you up on the other end, and I hope you all had a great Memorial Day weekend. Hey, everybody, this is Charles Max Wood with the Teach Me to Code podcast, and we are here with Andrew Schaefer. Andrew is somebody that I met through the Utah Ruby Users Group. But he's more than just a member of the Utah Ruby Users Group. He also has helped organize the Agile Roots conference here in Salt Lake City. He's one of the primary people who worked on Puppet. And he's spoken at several conferences, including some of the big Agile conferences, Velocity 2009. He also spoke at some Ruby conferences, including the International RubyConf 2008 and Mountain West RubyConf. And we are just pleased to have him on the show. How's it going, Andrew?
Well, thanks for that great introduction. It's going pretty well, except I have a slight sore throat, so I might sound a bit different than I usually do.
That's okay. We'll forgive you. Andrew is somebody that I've come to know is pretty involved in the Agile community. But before we start talking about Agile, why don't we talk a little bit about Agile Roots? It's coming up. It's June. I don't have it right. Oh, I do have it right in front of me.
It's June 14th and 15th. It's going to be at a place called NOAA's. It's the second year we've had this conference. We have a theme to build great software, and the theme for us is sort of addressing a piece in the software development process in kind of the formation of the requirements of the software. So My background is technical, so for me, great software is something that's testable, it's maintainable, it's a joy to work on. But there's also this notion of great software from the user's perspective, and those things aren't always equivalent. So one of the things that we're focused on this year is trying to get best practices, not just for technical best practices, but also for developing software that your users will love.
That sounds great, and it's really something that I think we all need to learn to focus on. And we were talking about that a little bit earlier, but before we attack that, I just want to point out that it looks like you've got a pretty good lineup there. I mean, you've got Dr. Alistair Cockburn, you've got Jeff Patton.
It's pronounced Coburn.
Coburn?
It's the Scottish pronunciation, yes. And if you pronounce it like that in his presence, then he will be sure to correct you.
Okay, well, if he hears this, I apologize now. He seems like an interesting fellow. I haven't actually met him myself, though, so.
Alistair is quite a character. Anyway, I'll let you finish your thought, and we'll...
All right. But yeah, I mean, it looks like you've got a bunch of good people coming. Pat Maddox, who I saw at the last Mountain West Ruby Comp, and just several other people. It looks like it's going to be a great couple of days. Now, is that a Monday and Tuesday?
It is a Monday and Tuesday.
Okay. That's good.
Honestly, this lineup, I would challenge anyone to find a better value for a software conference. We have a world-class lineup of speakers, people that are essentially thought leaders in every aspect of software development, from innovation, product design. Alcer is obviously a figurehead in the Agile movement. Diana Larson is the chair of the Agile Alliance. We have a bunch of people that are kind of crossing over from the design and user experience world. And it's just sort of a mixing pot. We're going to have some tutorials on testing. It's just a mixing pot of all the things that you need to really develop software. So I think as a technologist, sometimes we have a tendency to get lost in the technical detail. But at the end of the day, this exercise is to enable a business, is to enable some sort of business experiment.
Yeah, and it makes sense. I mean, you know, we all work for either ourselves or somebody else, but ultimately we're building code so that somebody can make money. And that money is the money that goes right back into our pockets to pay our paychecks and pay for our insurance and whatever else we're getting out of our work. So, you know, I mean, it's not just about building great code. It's about building great products.
Well, it's about understanding and access to information. There's lots of good reasons to build software that's not for money. If you participate in open source, and that's where some things get blurry because of how, I mean, Linux and open source is big and venture-backed business at this point. But if you understand that you want to make money, or you think you want to make money, and you're writing software that doesn't necessarily fulfill that, then something's wrong. And if you go look, I have a couple interesting anecdotes just from watching some of this develop at afar. But if you look at some of the open source projects, for example, Mongrel in the Ruby community, it was developed and it was utilized essentially by everyone. Mongrel was the web server for Rails for a long time. Mm-hmm. And the person who wrote that, he didn't necessarily capture any value, at least not monetary value. And on some level, I think there's a disconnect in some people's mind about how to capture the value.
Uh-huh.
From their efforts. Like you don't get paid because you're smart. You don't get right. paid because you solve problems. You get paid because you create a value and then you set some sort of arrangements, some sort of expectation to capture the value. And if you don't have that full circle, then you're not gonna make money. And that's the bottom line.
Right. And some of this ties back into a post that you told me about on Pat Maddox's blog, where he talks about, are you punching your users in the face? This is kind of the same idea, but what are the key points there, and how does this tie in with the purpose of the conference this year?
Well, so Pat Maddox is actually giving, I don't want to ruin it, but his talk proposal is essentially a talk that I hoped someone would give at some point. And if you want to go check out what that is. Pat Maddox is pretty big and known in the Ruby community, but he's also been exposed to a lot of the Agile people, you know, the Agile mm-hmm. pantheon. And so I think he has a unique perspective on this, and I'm really looking forward to his talk. But this post that he made about punching users in the face was coming from a conversation that he had with another person who's speaking Agile roots, Jeff Patton. And Jeff Patton, he has... He's done a lot of stuff. He's accomplished a lot of stuff. He worked for ThoughtWorks for a long time. He was the 2007 winner of the Gordon Pask Award, which if you're into the Agile community, that's a big deal. But his whole purpose right now is basically kind of getting people to understand what we were just talking about, that the value that you create is not from the unit test. It's not from I think you look at some of these other movements, like there's the craftsmanship movement, which I'm a fan of, but you can kind of unit test your way into it just becomes like an end unto itself, and that's great as a craftsman. But if you aren't building software that users want to use, then what are you actually putting your energy into?
Right.
And I think finding the balance, because I do believe there's another guy. He's not speaking here, but he's great in sort of the agile thing. His name's Brian Foote. He wrote an essay a long time ago called "A Big Ball of Mud." And if you've never read "A Big Ball of Mud," you should go read it. And he gave a talk at Agile 2008 that I attended, and he was talking about the big ball of mud. He was talking about a bunch of different stuff and kind of weaving it all together. And he got to this point in his talk, and he's a great speaker. I recommend you watch it, any speech he gives. He said, with a pregnant pause, he said, "What do you call someone who writes code like this?" After talking about every possible anti-pattern and nastiness that you could imagine in code. And then everyone was just sort of like scratching their head and throwing things out there. And he paused, and he looked into the audience reflectively, and then he said, "Millionaires." And it's true. You can look historically. There's been lots of code, and some of us have to work with this crap all the time, where someone solved someone's problem. They did it with fairly hacky, dirty, nasty code, but they walked away with millions of dollars. And that's the reality. And if you don't want to face that reality, if you don't understand that reality, then you're probably doomed to write a bunch of really clean code and then complain that no one pays you money.
Mm-hmm. It's true. It's interesting how you dig into some of this code that is everywhere, and you realize that, you know, it's something that everybody uses, but in the end, yeah, it's poorly written, and you know, yeah, I don't really know what else to say to that, you know, except for yeah, that makes total sense.
Well, what it means, although. And I had some personal experience with this in the last few years. And as a technologist, I think there's a tendency in our organizations to sort of discount the sales and marketing side of the organization. But what it means, if you look at how business is done, this is not unique to software, but marketing and sales, they win. They pay the bills. Mm-hmm. And you don't win because you have the best product. In a lot of cases, you win because people think that you have a great brand, because they think that they get a great value. It doesn't necessarily need to be quote unquote the truth. It needs to be something that everyone consensually exchanges value for.
Right. It comes back to the classic example of the beta cassettes versus VHS, where one was clearly the, I guess, higher quality technology, but you know, ultimately it was the other one that everyone was buying, so that's the one that won.
There's momentum, there's politics. So the flip side of this, I think you can get kind of jaded. You know, if you don't have any ethics, then you just start thinking, okay, well, I'm just going to make a bunch of money and be unethical about it. I'm going to make crap, I'm going to sell it because I'm going to put all this money into selling, and people do that, and that's great, but that's not how I want to do things. That's not how I want to think about things. So sort of to balance out this understanding of just, you know, it's basic economics. It's marketing and supply and demand and delivering and all that kind of stuff. But at the same time, there's some very interesting, we're kind of getting off the Agile Roots topics, but Tim O'Reilly has a quote that I'm very fond of that says, create more value than you capture. As long as you're creating more value than you capture, assuming that you're capturing enough to make a profit, then you're always going to be growing. Your company is going to be growing. Your users are going to love you. That's the bottom line. And then I'm also, I like these ideas coming from a guy named Umar Haque, who's an economist from Harvard, who talks about creative capitalism and how what we've put too much emphasis on in capitalism up to this point is the cost of creation over the price of destruction.
Right.
And then he goes through and he analyzes how that leads to all these things and all these choices that we've made and the impacts that they have on how we develop products and how we treat the environment and yada, yada, yada. But I think personally, I like trying to, I want to make money, not because I'm not necessarily motivated to like make that money, but because I'm motivated because I have a family. And that's something you alluded to earlier. I at one point in my life I was mostly motivated by ideas, but once I had a family and I kind of want to buy them nice stuff, so it made me want to make some money.
Mm-hmm. Well, and it's interesting. I mean, we're talking about products and software and things like that that people can sell and make a profit from, or sell and build a reputation on, or, you know, get some kind of value from as they give value to other people. But I really feel like it's not just tangible or intangible in the case of software products or things, but I think there's an idea economy there. And when we talk about Agile, because, you know, I mean, you know, we did get off the Agile topic, but we are talking about Agile because there's an idea economy. There's this idea that, you know, these ideas have value, and that's why we have people trying to sell other people on all of these ideas surrounding Agile, or how to program Ruby, or how to write your tests, or whatever it is. And, you know, it's so interesting that at the same time, you know, it has all the same problems. I mean, you have the politics, you have the people trying to make a name or make money or make this or
absolutely. So one of my favorite quotes is from this guy. I have lots of favorite quotes, but this is a good one. His name's Eric Hoffer. He wrote a bunch of crazy stuff, but he says it, and I might be misquoting it, but basically everything starts as a movement, becomes a business, and ends up a racket. and I think that's a truism. In Agile, there is an ecosystem. There is quite a bit of you know, an economy that's developed around that ecosystem. But there's also a gem of truth in Agile. And let me just back up and give you my kind of personal Agile journey, because when I first was introduced to Agile, I found a lot of the practices and ideas wasteful and painful and annoying. And I don't think I was wrong. I think that the way that they were implemented in that particular environment, particularly, you know, the way that they were implemented politically, didn't actually help us develop great software. It was a venture-funded company. There were, you know, 30 engineers thrown together, and there was the quote-unquote Agile expert. And I recall getting in many discussions that bordered on heated debates about what we were doing and why we were doing it. And I was fresh out of grad school at the time, and I would be told, well, that's not what Agile does. That's not how Agile people do this. And I was personally like, what? Agile people don't think about the problems they're having and try to solve them? And I think if you look at the principles of the Agile, and that's really what the first Agile Roots theme was getting back to the roots of Agile, getting back to the principles of Agile. If you look at those principles, then that's not the case. But what happens in a lot of Agile implementations is you see a lot of cargo culting and a lot of dogma instead of a lot of, well, what are our problems? What are our strengths? How are we going to solve our problems with our strengths? And it wasn't until I was introduced to Alistair Coburn and the Salt Lake City Agile Roundtable that I started to see the like that germ of truth, that seed of truth. And for me, I actually went there essentially to try to, I just want to understand it. And I went there maybe with a little bit of a chip on my shoulder, even thinking that these Agile guys are all going to be kind of silly. And I just wanted to get it from the horse's mouth. But then once I got into the midst of it and met some of these people like Jean Johansson and Paige Johansson, who helped organize this, and Alistair, of course. And I got to see the clarity of their thought process and the fact that they're actually delivering working software and they're doing all this stuff. Jean runs the Utah XP group, by the way. And those guys, you know, basically through that process, I kind of became a convert. And the curve, whenever the Agile, or not the Agile, but the Mountain West Ruby Con.
Hello?
What's that?
You just dropped out there for a second.
I was going to say there's a Pat Maddox, who we've already referenced. He gave a talk at Mountain West Ruby Conference about his introduction to Ruby, and he had this graph of his satisfaction with Ruby, and it started off, and then it went negative, and then it went, you know, way positive now, and it's still climbing. It's this graph is still climbing, mm-hmm. and that sort of mirrors my experience with Agile. I started off having essentially negative experience, and then through that, and now, I mean, if you look at my other work and this kind of stuff, if you look at my slide share and some of the talks I've given, then now I'm taking Agile and into other domains. So the last year and a half, 2 years, I've been talking about trying to use Agile methodologies and Agile approaches in system administration and operations in highly scaled web applications. So kind of comes full circle.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, I think I'm kind of following the same track with Agile, but I've only been in development full-time for about 3 years, and I kept hearing people say the words, but I just kind of wrote it off as a buzzword, you know, because you hear it so much, and you hear it associated with so many different things. So, I mean, you hear Agile, and somebody's saying Agile, and they're talking about pair programming. And somebody else says Agile, and they're talking about the entire set of methodologies or practices behind XP. And somebody else says Agile, and they're talking about Scrum. And somebody else says Agile, and they're talking about Kanban.
It's true.
And so, I mean, after a while, it went from this buzzword to just this confusing mess. And it was like, well, what are these people talking about? Agile?
Exactly. This is why we started Agile Roots, basically.
Yeah. But and over the last, maybe the last year, I actually started getting involved. So I started going to the Ruby users group about a year and a half, 2 years ago, and I started getting involved with the programming community. And as I got to know people and kind of got to get a better reference on what people were really talking about with Agile, somebody finally pointed at the Agile Manifesto, and I went and looked at it, and I said, oh, now I get it. And all of these practices are people's way of trying to get to the core values behind this manifesto.
It's true. When most people say Agile, what most people mean, and this has to do with lots of factors, what most people mean is a kind of watered down, half implemented version of Scrum. That's what most people mean, which is sort of, it's good and bad. And I think that the comment that sums it up best for me was last year at Agile Roots on a panel, when we were talking about some of these very issues. Diana Larson, who is the chair of the Agile Alliance, she made a comment that Agile, the word, has crossed the chasm, but most of the practices haven't.
Right.
And so there's this lag where Agile, but then it also creates a bit of a backlash. Where people have, because they've had like an impure taste, then they have a bad taste for the whole thing, right? And you can see people debate this and flame each other on the internets. They're arguing on the internets, Chuck.
It's true. It's very true. And to be perfectly honest, all that really does is muddy the water further. I mean,
exactly.
You know, because yeah, my first approach to anything I don't know anything about is to go Google it. And if you go Google Agile or Agile development, I mean, you find all kinds of stuff. And none of it seems to unify on any one thing. And it's just, it's nuts. But, and to further muddy the water, I mean, we get into these people who have this monetary investment and you know, not just the economy of ideas, but the economy of projects and the economy of practice and, you know, all of these different things that just totally mess with it. And yeah, and so I'm really excited to be able to go to Agile Roots and just see where people are coming from now that I kind of understand the background and the core,
right,
and understand what Agile can mean for me, because I kind of get the feeling that that's ultimately what it's about. It's okay, well, you find a set of methodologies or practices that work for you or for your team. And that way you can use methodologies that play to your strengths and you can adapt to whatever comes your way so that you're not stuck in some rigid set of practices like waterfall.
Yeah, because rigid seems like the opposite of agile, doesn't it?
Yes.
That's definitely the way that Alistair thinks about this. If you go back, part of this comes from the history. So if you go back to the formation of the Agile Manifesto, those people, and I might be interpreting some of this, those people in some ways were reactionary because there was a lot of other really hard, very rigid methodologies that were being trumpeted. There was RUP, there's really no waterfall. Waterfall is this mythical beast.
Uh-huh.
That's kind of held up as a straw man and burned in effigy in like every agile meeting.
Right.
But there's really no waterfall. and even the original paper that talks that named waterfall, they weren't advocating that as a methodology. Go back and read that paper, you'll see that they essentially say that's a bad way to do it. And in the context of that paper, they talk about these feedback loops, which are essentially the same sort of thing that you need, whether you're doing agile or not. In my opinion, trying to do agile is not what you should be trying to do. You should be trying to be awesome.
Right. And it's true. When I was talking to Dave Thomas, he was also one of the guys that helped put this thing together, put the Agile Manifesto together.
Yep.
And
he brought some Ruby over here. Give it up.
He did. He sure did. Wrote the book on it. But, you know, I mean, I was talking to him, and he basically said, well, yeah, I mean, you know, people think that we just got together and kind of had this mind-blowing revelation kind of thing. And really what they did is they sat down, they talked about what they were already doing. In other words, the Agile movement was more or less already underway. They just gave it a name and wrote down some of the core principles.
Right. They were already doing those practices, right? XP and Scrum and all these other things had predated the Agile Manifesto.
Mm-hmm. But at the same time, I mean, you know, those practices were helping people be more awesome. But at the same time, I think it's interesting because, as you pointed out, the rigidity is kind of the opposite of agile, right? And when I first was introduced to XP, it seemed really rigid to me. And I'm not saying that it's not agile, but what I am saying is that for me, jumping right in and all of a sudden having to perform all this ceremony around building my code was really hard. And I agree with some of the practices that they do. I mean, I like some of the ideas behind pair programming and test first. And I like kind of the scrum board or whatever you call it, or the sprint board, you know, where you have your story cards and things like that. But, you know, if you go from no structure to high structure, it's just really hard. And I think that's another barrier to agile, and sometimes doesn't feel very agile.
It's true, especially when it's implemented in a dogmatic fashion. I used to have a problem interacting with parts of the community because you go on some of these mailing lists, and you'll see someone come on, and they're probably trolls most of the time, but sometimes they're sincere, and they'll say, agile doesn't work, or we had this problem, and they might be the aggressor, they might not, but everyone will just pile on them and say, oh, well, you didn't do everything right, so there's no way you did agile. Agile didn't fail, you just didn't do it right. You didn't do everything right. And then in that same mailing list, on the very same day, someone will come on and they'll say, well, we want to try agile, or we're new to agile, or we're having problems, we want to transition, blah, blah, blah. And the response from the exact same people will be, there's no way you can do everything right, so you got to, you know, pick some practices and try to do it. And that, it's just this tautological problem that you can never get out of if your only criteria for doing agile is that you succeeded.
Right.
And I think that's problematic. And I think it goes back to some of what you're talking about, where there is an economy and people do have reputations and they do have, you know, their delusions of grandeur and their legends in their own mind, and that's fine. That's not unique to agile. That's just human, and they're, you know, that's the human condition essentially.
Right.
And that's what it is. But in my opinion, you can't really do agile, what's expressed in the principles of the Agile Manifesto, until you can get past the the self-delusion that you're doing it, or that you're ever done. Like, you're never done. You never did Agile. You delivered some software, right? So what's next? Uh-huh. How are you going to do it better? And there are some very, very powerful, very meaningful developments in the Agile community. The stuff that the Kanban guys are doing, David Anderson's Kanban stuff, there's some other people talking about that as well. I think that it's great. I love the thought they're adding real options. This guy, Chris Motz, there's all these kind of gaps that are being filled in by the forward-thinking members of the community.
Uh-huh. Yeah. It's I'm always encouraged when I feel like I'm in line with people who are smarter than me. And so, you know, seeing some of this, the way that these people are thinking about these things and learning about it and then implementing it and finding that it works for me is encouraging.
I feel like there's another part of Agile, and this is reflecting a little bit on what you said about XP and how it feels hard. There's certain things that you do in Agile, you know, and that's undefined, as we already said. But you basically, you have to have certain discipline, right? Mm-hmm. What most people take from Agile, and this is why some of these implementations are problematic, is, well, we're gonna stop writing documentation and we're gonna start having a daily meeting, and that's basically it. And all of a sudden, we're gonna magically make this great software. It just doesn't work like that. In the analogy that Alistair came up with in the Agile Roundtable, I think it was Alistair. If it was someone else, I'm sorry, I don't give credit. Is this notion of dessert, the dessert tray, Agile, and it's basically taking the pieces that taste good to us, right?
Uh-huh.
So on one hand, XP does have some things that you might consider rigid, but if you think about anything worth doing, anything that is of value, it takes some discipline, and it probably takes doing some things that don't seem very fun, especially at first. Mm-hmm. And you know, frankly, if you're introduced to test-driven development and you're not used to that, it seems like a big pain in the butt. And there's a lot of people, I mean, it's kind of taken for granted now that if you're going to develop code, you're going to check it into a version control repository, and you're going to have some cycle. Hopefully continuous integration, that's sort of taken for granted. But for a long time, you know, version control was considered overhead by a lot of people that were smart.
Yeah, it's true. So this kind of leads into another question I had for you. If you are having problems with your process or lack of process, and you think that Agile or one of the Agile methodologies may work for you, what's the best way to go about implementing it so that you can make the most of it, so you can be awesome, as you said, and kick out some just awesome code?
I think so. I break Agile into kind of two buckets. So you have practices that are technical best practices, and then you have practices that are sort of planning and communication best practices.
Mm-hmm.
And in many cases, the hardest part of the software process, and as soon as you have more than one person, then you have politics, right?
Right.
It is the communication. So I think that the first step, this isn't just me, this is what I think, is getting everyone to communicate honestly.
Mm-hmm.
And often the hardest person for us to communicate honestly with is ourselves.
Right.
And I think once you can do that, and that's simple, but it's not easy, then you have a lot of other things that kind of open up to you. And if you can communicate and you can collaborate and you create a culture of learning, the rest of this stuff will take care of itself, in my opinion.
Right.
And then there's also you need to somehow reflect and adjust your behavior.
How often do you need to do that?
Well, so this is an interesting question, right? In a lot of Agile practices, you have this notion of a retrospective, a reflection workshop. In my opinion, the way that most people practice those is somewhat wasteful, right?
Uh-huh.
And I like the Kanban. I like Arlo Belshi's naked planning. I like this idea that you don't actually do that as an event. You should be doing that constantly. You should be doing that in as a continuous process. So you're not doing reflection as a, oh, let's stop and reflect. You're doing this like, oh, I'm doing my work, and I just noticed that I did this thing. It's not very fun, and I've done it 10 times a day, so I'm going to automate it away, right, or whatever that means. And it's really the Japanese word for this is Kaizen, which is continuous improvement.
Mm-hmm.
So I personally don't think that that you need to have that on a schedule, on a time scale, although sometimes it's nice to have it as an event, you know, particularly to like break up. If things aren't working, then sometimes it's nice to get everyone in the room and be like, okay, what can we do better? What are we doing well now, and what can we do better? What's broken? And then, you know, kind of goes back to that communicate honestly.
Right. So you're advocating doing it when you need to, rather than doing it on a schedule or, you know, unnecessarily, I guess.
So what I'm advocating is that you, and this is hard, right? Like, Agile, I think one of the flaws of Agile, a flaw, and maybe it's not a flaw, but it's a truism, it sort of presupposes that you have a bunch of highly capable, highly motivated adults that are trying to build the best possible software. And that's not always true, right? So if you take these ideas that are predicated on that, and you put it with a bunch of people who are capricious, and they, you know, they have their technical deficiencies, and they have their politics, and they already have their momentum and their habits, then it might not be pretty.
Right. So there's another principle there in hire good people, I guess.
Good people solve problems.
It's true. It's very true. And, you know, it's one thing that I've seen among all of the places that I've worked. I mean, some places had just talented people that had specific problems that kind of sabotaged the whole thing. And there were other places where you had moderate people who were really interested in getting better and who were really willing and able or learning to communicate. And it seemed like the latter were the ones that got more stuff done.
Well, so one of the other things I like from time to time is a good sports analogy. And I think you see that in sports as well, where you have a team who, and it doesn't really matter what the sport is, but I'll pick basketball, a team who has some of the best players, and I'm going to pick on the Portland Trailblazers, but they can't seem to win. And this isn't the Portland Trailblazers now, but, you know, you go back 10 years, Portland had the highest paid roster. They had a bunch of superstars, but they couldn't pass the ball to each other.
Right.
So it's a question of how do you function collectively as much as it is like who's the best person. And if you have a bunch of superstars and another analogy I use is the notion of constructive and destructive interference. It's like how wave, like the wave frequency line up with each other.
Right.
If you have people that are very powerful, but they have destructive interference with each other, then it doesn't really matter what they would be able to accomplish by themselves in another setting. They're going to be, you know, they're going to make each other less effective than they might be by themselves.
Right. Yeah, it's very true, and it's something that you see, I think, in every organization, because you're going to have a little of both. Hopefully you have a lot of one and not a lot of the other. But, I mean, everybody does some of that, and, you know.
Because we're humans, right? That's
yep.
That's our human condition. That's how it is. At the same time, it doesn't mean you should shy away from conflict. I think conflict is an optimizing force, and I feel it's actually a big anti-pattern if there's no conflict at all.
Right. Well, I'm one of those people that's somewhat passive, and If there's a battle and I have to be involved, I'm going to be one of the people trying to bring it to a resolution, as opposed to pushing things and exploring all of the possibilities. And that's something that I think I need to work on, because I think you're right. I think in a lot of ways, if we can come to understand each other and come to understand all of the ideas there and allow the conflict to happen so that, you know, when we break things down to their core parts, we can reconstruct something out of the, you know, out of the rubble that works for everybody and, you know, solves a problem.
Well, I blogged about this quite a bit, or I did a long time ago. There's a book called The Five Dysfunctions of a Team, and it talks about this stuff, and you can look it up. It's worth reading. It's written sort of from a businessy, mamby-pamby, you know, if you're like a technical purist, then sometimes you shy away from that type of material, but I think it's worth reading. Mm-hmm. And it talks about how this very thing happens. If you don't have those conflicts, if you don't bring them out, then in most cases what will happen is they just become sublimated conflicts that never go away. And so people just start to become subversive.
Right. Well, it looks like we're running out of time, so I'm going to start to wrap this up. First off, you mentioned that you blog about this. Do you have a blog somewhere that people can go and see what you're thinking or what you were thinking way back whenever you were writing on it?
So I have – my Twitter is Little Idea.
Uh-huh.
And that has a link to my blog, which is stochasticresonance.wordpress.com.
Can you spell that for me?
It's easier just to go to Little Idea on Twitter.
Okay. One other thing that I want to ask you, let's say that I have a boss that isn't quite sold on sending me to Agile Roots conference. Just let's say, and you're going to try and convince him that there is some value in me going to that conference. What would you say?
Well, first I would try to convince him that there's value in him going.
Uh-huh.
One of the people that's coming to speak, who I have a lot of respect and definitely expanded my understanding of Agile and business and all these processes, is a guy named Israel Gott, and he has a blog called The Agile Executive.
Uh-huh.
He talks quite a bit about, you know, the business case for Agile and from a real executive perspective. I mean, he's managed with Agile processes you know, business unit of 1,000 people. And one of the things we did in both the first Agile Roots and this year is we have content for technologists, we have content for product managers, we have content for testers, we have content for designers, and we also have content for managers and executives. And I think that if you have deficiencies in any of those roles in your software process, then they're going to kind of manifest themselves as some pathology in this virtuous cycle that we're hoping to achieve.
Uh-huh.
You know, and hopefully you're trying to support a business. So I first try to convince him that he should go. And then for you, I mean, are you guys trying to do Agile as a practice, or is this your own personal growth?
It's a little bit of both. I mean, I think that there's value in me learning this, but we're trying to implement, and I'm going to use air quotes and probably be in trouble at work, but we're trying to implement, quote, Agile. But there's not a clear set of, there's not a clear direction as far as how we're planning on implementing that or what good it's actually going to do once we get whatever practices in place.
Right.
And so I think it would be beneficial just to see the structure, but at the same time, I found that a lot of the principles and practices behind Agile don't just apply when I'm dealing with my team at work, but a lot of them apply to how I approach my software that I'm building for me here on my computer at home on my free time. And so I'm really interested in learning that. And besides that, I really enjoy talking to people and helping people and finding ways to help them deal with whatever problems they're having. And I figure that the more I know there, the better I can help people here.
Okay. So the way that Agile Roundtable works in Salt Lake, and this is, I'm not sure this is the answer you want, but Alistair has the Agile Roundtable from 2 to 5.
Uh-huh.
In the middle of the day on a Thursday. And his approach and his sort of attitude is, if you're building software and you're trying to implement Agile, whatever that means to you, whatever level you understand that, and you think that you can't give up 3 hours once a month to try to get better I mean, really what we're talking about here is like the meta level. It's the meta level of your processes. If you can't devote 3 hours to that, then how committed are you to really doing that better? And for the conference, if you look at the lineup that we have for Agile Roots, the quality of speakers, we have world-class speakers, and you compare what you will give up in time and money to go to that conference versus any other conference, the concentration of ideas and the personas and what we ask you to pay and what we give you, and you're going to get food all day, both days, and we're going to have an evening social for what we ask you to pay, it's a bargain. You won't find a better value.
Right. Now, Noah's, is that the building between 106 South and 123rd South over by the freeway?
I don't know the exact address. It's on the website, but it's down there in South Jordan-ish area. Yeah,
yeah, I've seen it driving around. That might be another good selling point because I work within a couple miles of it. I know exactly where it is.
So one of the reasons we chose that location is, and this is sort of unique to our locale, is you get you can get people from Salt Lake and Utah Valley. And it's a cool building. I don't know if you go to their website and check out the inside of it. It's all hardwood and there's like billiard tables and it's gonna be fun.
Yeah, they have one in Linden. I think it's a little smaller, but yeah, it's the same kind of thing and it's kind of a fun thing. I mean, I've had everything from family parties to work meetings there, so you know, it's really a cool place.
Oh really? I've never been there. I saw the pictures. I mean, last year, if you were at Agile Roots, everyone that I talked to gave it rave reviews, and we're just trying to do a better job this year. We have, like I said, a slightly different theme, but not that I think we fixed everything that's wrong with Agile and got everyone back to the roots. but we didn't want to complain too much about the same thing for too long. So,
right. So I have another question. Are you still looking for volunteers to help you out?
We could probably have another volunteer or two.
Okay.
Just depends on, I think we're getting kind of full, but if, someone has special circumstances and they want to talk to me and they can get here and you know, what we're asking, we don't make any money on this thing. So, you know, it helps us if people can pay, but if not, we can probably find something for someone to do.
Okay. So if somebody wants to volunteer, just have them contact you, tweet you on Twitter or email you, or what's the best way to do that?
If there's a barrage, then I can't make promises that I can, like, you know, host the whole party, but sure. I mean, just reach out. I'm very personable. All the people that are organizing this, you know, if you have the desire to participate, and that's something that's holding you back, we can definitely see what we can do.
All right. Well, I'm going to throw my weight behind this because I really believe that, you know, these are conversations that we need to be having. And I also know you and Kay personally. I worked with Kay when I worked at Mosey. She was brought in to help us with our testing. And, you know,
she that's what she loves.
Yeah. And she's a brilliant, brilliant person. And, you know, just one of the friendliest people I've met too. And, you know, you don't always get to match up the brains with the nice people, but, you know, she's both and, you know, and you're very approachable and friendly. And, you know, so, yeah, I mean, if you have any suggestions for the conference or you want to get involved, I mean, either Andrew or Kay, you know, just reach out and talk to them. But, you know, at the same time, you know, they're very involved and passionate about Agile and about, you know, different aspects of it, sure, but you know, ultimately when it comes right down to it, they go out of their way to make things do things right. And
I go out of my way to try to make things happen, whatever that means. And really, you know, I can definitely go meta and, you know, talk about crazy stuff and talk about it all day long. But at the end of the day, what's really about is building software and enabling the businesses or enabling, you know, the technology. And if you're not doing that and you're only talking about it, then you're doing something wrong.
Yep. And that's what this is all about. So, you know, go to agileroots.com.
Agileroots.com.
Go over there, sign up. I think it's going to be well worth it. And, you know, look for me there because I'd love to talk to you as well.
Absolutely.
All right. Well, we'll wrap this up. Thanks for coming onto the show, Andrew. And
My pleasure, Charles.
Yeah, we'll get this out on Monday or Tuesday. I usually release on Monday night or Tuesday morning. And, you know, people will be able to find it there. And, you know, hopefully we can get the word out and get people talking about this stuff.
Yeah, it's coming out. It's pretty quick. So it'll be, you'll release it, what, 2 weeks before the conference?
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah, so it's a bit short notice, but if you can make it, I guarantee it'll be worth your time.
Absolutely. All right. Well, thanks.
Cheers.
Yep. All right, so that's the interview. That's the discussion we had. It was really, really great, and I've actually talked to Andrew several times about this and about starting up businesses and just all kinds of things. He's just a brilliant guy, and it's always a pleasure to talk to him. There are a few other things that I want to say really quickly. First off, I just want to thank everybody who's helped with the podcast. And what I mean by that is, I mean, we have had, we had 3,152 downloads last month. That's about 1,070 more than we had last month or in April. And so I just want to thank everybody who's talked about the podcast, who's written a review on iTunes, done any of that stuff, sent me an email and let me know what you thought. I appreciate all of it. So I just want to put that out there and let you know just how appreciative I am. And, you know, just look forward to having these discussions with people or just having a discussion that you can listen to, where I'm just talking about things that are important or interesting to me. So, you know, take advantage of this. And if you have anything that you want me to talk about, just let me know. Also go check out our sponsor, New Relic, at www.newrelic.com. And with all that, go out and build code better.